Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello. Welcome to Monday Morning Deep Dish. My name is Shepard Price. I'm your host as usual. Joining me today is Betsy, aka LBR, and Janelle.
Hi.
Today we're talking about stats. We're talking about stats today and what they are, what advanced analytics means, and why they're important. Over on the other podcast, I'm called the Analytics Darling. So it felt a good time to help sort of explain that with my two guests. So Janelle, as the sort of newcomer to advanced analytics, asking your questions today, so go ahead.
Yeah, I have I'm really excited for this conversation because I believe that I have personally a lot to learn about stats, and especially about why they're important, and so I'm really excited to hear from both of you to flesh this out a little bit more, even for my own benefit and for other people's benefit too, to see how we can use stats and to learn a bit more about them. So I've read a lot about how it's a battle between two sides with the data nerds, such as yourself, with the old school hockey people, which is more like me, just growing up watching hockey and eyeballing it, you know? So I'm kind of interested, you know, this has been quite a few years now in the making, but what is the motivation or maybe the driving interest in stats? What do you think about that?
I think we should start by, like, me and LBR sort of explaining how we got into stats. So LBR, if you want to sort of explain that, because that is a part of the driving interest.
Yeah, sure. So my dad, and so I was born and raised in Chicago, but we moved here when I was a kid to Atlanta. So there's not a whole lot of hockey here. There is a lot of baseball. It's never been something I've been interested in. But my dad, who got me into hockey, he loves baseball and he was a mathematician. So he was just really into applying that to sports in general. And of course, baseball, it was much more recognizable, especially became really popular after Moneyball in 2011. But my dad was an early adapter of that and that whole analytical side of looking at the game to enhance like your enjoyment, because he always said it was like, if you could understand the reasons why somebody did something, you could predict or at least try to figure out if they're going to do it again. And I always just found that way more interesting than just watching. It's kind of like a layer on top of watching to me. So yeah, it's pretty much my dad the whole time. And then of course, the Blackhawks being the team that I cheer for, they were an early adapter of analytics. I think Stan Bowman in 2009 was like one of the first to come out and say, hey, we hired a third party firm to help us with analytics. And, you know, three cups later, everybody's doing it, especially the summer of analytics that boomed in 2014. So it's just been a really good thing for me, liking it when I was a kid. And then right when I was getting into hockey big time, analytics just were the thing. So that's pretty much my story, was like it as a kid, happened to hit right at the moment when it became popular. So
I sort of got into hockey late in life, sophomore's junior year in high school, and I think so my take on this on it is this: if you got into hockey late and you never played, You're going to be more attracted to analytics, I think, than people who played or got into it from childhood. Because you sort of grow up with one or the other. Like Dave, our manager at SEH, doesn't like analytics as much. And I think part of that is because he plays the game, so he sort of comes at it with that knowledge. I coming at it from my perspective, not having played it, love analytics.
That is really interesting. I hadn't heard that perspective before about actually, you know, playing it. And then of course, like getting, but you know, Betsy, you said you got into it at a young age too, but I guess that helps having a mathematician in the family.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with Shepherd because I've talked with a lot of people who have never played. I played a little bit when I was little, but I stopped when we moved to the South. There's just no hockey here.
Yeah.
And I just never got into like the coach's mentality, I think maybe is like an aspect that a lot of hockey players who play have. I'm not saying people who don't play won't like analytics too or vice versa. But yeah, I think there is a distinct line sometimes between people who have played and people who maybe are approaching it from completely as a viewer.
Yeah. And or also, you know, for me, I have an interest in the cultural aspect of it. You know, growing up in Canada, you know, everybody had some pond hockey experience, no matter what, how seriously you played. So a lot of it was about like the finesse and the beauty of the game, you know, which I'm not saying that numbers can't be beautiful, but like that's something that is intimidating to me, you know? And so it was more of the idea that it was a game that everybody could participate in and you know, had the ability to do that in their backyard, basically. But I wanna touch on something else that so Betsy, I think you said like for you, you feel like you get another level of enjoyment for the game and also saw kind of like a difference in the way teams played. So I wonder if either of you could speak a little more about how using stats and analytics are helping the teams maybe play in a different way or if they improve with them.
Well, I start by saying that we know for a fact that, you know, teams use them. We know that they have their own systems that maybe fans don't have. So our data might not line up exactly with theirs, but we do know that they're heavily used in games, either from, you know, GMs picking players that they're going to draft or sign to, you know, on ice decisions that are being made. So we know it's a part of the game. We know that it's been around for a while now. And how much they use them is the thing that it's still a mystery to fans. We don't know if, like, Coach Q, we know for a fact that he got, like, stats reports in the 2013 playoffs. There was, like, this big thing about him and I think it was Hitchcock that were like, oh, they got dueling stats reports. What's happening? We don't know how they use them. We just know that it's always been around for a while now and teams are trying to use them in a way to, you know, become better at whatever. And how they measure that, again, we're not really sure as fans exactly what they're doing or how they're using them.
Right. We know they're leaning into them, especially with the recent GM hires of like Kyle Dubas and John Chayka. It's very clear that those guys are analytics guys.
Yep.
Wow. That's fascinating. I didn't know that it was kind of a hidden thing about the fans not really knowing how much, you know, the teams are using or how they're using the stats. So I found that really interesting.
It's very cool. There's been a lot of people who become kind of famous on like, Twitter and through analytics that have gotten hired by teams. Eric Tulusi is a perfect example. He's one of the pioneers for fanalytics, if you want to call it that. And he's, I think, still working for the Carolina Hurricanes, but there's a bunch of them charting hockey. Sean Tierney, I think he just got hired by a NHL team or an NHL affiliate, but he's been with the Atlantic for a while. So we do know that teams are using stats and they're using them as however, you know, their internal systems are using it, but they're also looking at what fans are doing and then they're hiring them. So we can kind of guesstimate from that what they're interested in, because obviously those, we have access to all of their information that those particular analytics people online were doing. But yeah, what is important to a team? Is it really all about shots, or do they care more about like microstats and tracking smaller minutiae inside the game, like these smaller events that happen?
Yeah.
Great. So, all right. For somebody just starting out with stats, a fan, I'm curious about what you think would be a good starting point for them. Like, is there a stat in particular they should look at? Is there something that they should learn about? What do you think is a good starting point?
I think, so the way I sort of started was looking at Corsi, shot share, and unexpected goal share, because those are sort of like the three most important possession metrics.
Okay.
And Corsi are just shot attempts. Shots on goal, block shots, and missed shots. Shots on goal is shot share. And then expected goal share is the quality of the chances you're getting versus the quality your opponent's getting. And those sort of tell you how well a team is playing. Like the Blackhawks are not the best at that at 5-on-5 this year. And so their 5-on-5 play is not great. Versus a team like Vegas, who is, again, the only sort of experience I have outside of the Blackhawks, who are very good at 5-on-5 and driving those metrics.
Betsy, do you have anything to add to that?
I agree. I mean, if you're looking at it from like trying to get into stats, those are the most easily accessible. They're tracked by the NHL shots. And then expected goals has become such a popular, because we've always been searching for shot quantity and shot quality evaluators, and expected goals came out, and you know there was a couple of models, but they pretty much weeded it down to one, and it's a slightly better predictor of success over time. So you know, just learning about those two things is something you can get into, and again, it's everything that a normal person can understand. You gotta shoot a lot of shots to score a lot of goals, and of course quality of shot impacts how many goals you're going to have. So those are two concepts that are really easy for even people who don't really like stats to understand. So those are easily accessible stats to me.
Right. And then I think there's also two more sort of context stats as well, which is offensive zone start percentage, which sort of goes back to how hard a shift you're taking usually. The more defensive the less your offensive zone start percentage, the sort of harder a shift you're taking. And then the other one is PDO, which explains a lot of things in terms of luck, which is just its save percentage plus shooting percentage.
Yeah, and that's something I had wanted to talk to both of you more about, if you can elaborate a little bit more on the PDO, because I've read about it being a luck. So to me, like a stat and a luck thing don't necessarily go hand in hand. So can you elaborate maybe a bit on this?
Yeah, so it's defined as luck because it's sort of it's changeable from time to time. Your shooting percentage may spike and then you hit a valley, or your goaltending might have a bad year. Last year, for example, Vegas, one of the best possession teams in terms of expected goal share and shot share and Corsi, had one of the worst PDOs in the league, which led to Gerard Gallant getting fired midseason, even though he was a great coach and they were doing all the right things. They were top of the league throughout the entire season in those possession metrics. They just had really bad shooting luck. And then Marc-Andre Fleury had a bad year. And now he's having a great year, which sort of makes their PDO go up this year. So it's called luck because it's sort of factors outside of your control. You can't control, let's say a goaltender makes an excellent save, though on a shot that should have probably gone in, that would have had a high expected goal rating. That's a factor outside of that shooter's control.
Okay. Fascinating. in terms of the Hawks, are there some stats that you think are something, an anomaly this season, or something maybe that the fans should be keeping an eye out for?
I don't think there's anything. Well, I'll say I would have expected maybe their shot numbers to be slightly better, because I feel like they're transitioning a lot better this season. So, you know, transitioning is obviously being able to carry the puck from one zone to another. And microstats track those as zone exits and zone entry in and out of the defensive and offensive zone. And I think that the Hawks have been doing a better job this year than last year. I'm not saying they're near the top of the league at it or anything like that, but I think they've improved. And I think when we get more micro stats out, which are manually tracked by individuals and we don't have access to them right this second, that those will be much higher than they were last year. And yet the shots at 5-on-5 are not great. They're a little bit better than last year, but not great. I think they're doing a better job with expected goals because I think they're getting in closer, but I would have expected them to have slightly higher puck possession, as it were. This team is very good at forechecking too right now. There's that whole tenacity thing going on. So again, I would think that there would be a little bit better puck possession. They're not great at defending is the problem.
Yes, they're still near the bottom of the league in terms of defensive, terms of metrics, which are like chances against and shots against and expected goals against. They're also having a really low shooting percentage at 5-on-5, and that might go up throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think they're better offensively than their score has shown 5-on-5.
Yes.
But they're still poor. People keep saying, like, I keep seeing it in the comments at Second City, they're like, oh, they're better defensively. And I'm like, are they? Or are you reading into how good they are at forechecking and trying to turn the puck the other way, which is a form of defense, but in other defensive categories, they're still bleeding a lot of shots and quality against. So,
yeah. And people sort of underrated Slater Cuckoo and Ole Mata last season.
Yeah.
Great. So here's a stat I want to know. How many games have gone into overtime for the Hawks versus every single other person in the league? And what's their success rate on that?
That's fun because a lot of teams are going to overtime a lot more. I don't know if that's a factor of no preseason or just closer games or, again, just playing the same opponents time and time again. You sort of figure them out.
Interesting.
And the division setting this year sort of plays into, there's a lot of talk about like the loser point and whether it means teams play for overtime late in close games.
You know what? It's funny because I would assume that us being in a division and playing the same teams over and over again, that the loser point would be like teams would not want to give loser points to other teams in the division. So they'd want to like try their hardest to finish in regulation. And yet there's a slight increase from last year at this point. Again, it's only like 15 to 15 games so far, but it's just a slight raise over last year. Yeah. The Blackhawks have gone to overtime or the shootout 7 times, which is tied for the most with Boston. And they have with Boston.
Okay.
The Bruins have gone 7 times, and I think I wrote this down. Sorry, my computer was being not cool earlier. So the Blackhawks have gone to OT. They've won in the shootout. They've won 3 times, lost 4. But in actual overtime, they've won 3 and lost 2. So they've lost an additional couple in the shootout. The Bruins are pretty much the same. They've won 3 in overtime and lost 2 in overtime. The next closest team has only gone to overtime 5 times. I think that's the Panthers.
Okay.
It's weird too, because the Blackhawks were, when 3-on-3 overtime originally happened, the Blackhawks were one of the best teams. Patrick Kane, Taves, and Keith were like one of the best. The only threesome pairing that was better was Crosby, Letang, and Malkin. And that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
And it was really like, for the first couple of years when Panarin was here too, the Blackhawks were really good. And then, you know, the dark years happened. And the Blackhawks have gone to, since 3-on-3 overtime came, more than any other team. I think it was like 82 times. And the next closest was like 71, the Red Wings. But they only have won like 52% of those. But if you had just gone the first few years, it would have been much higher. It would have been in like the 60s. You do in the last couple of years, it's been in the like 40s. So yeah. And it's weird because the talent hasn't changed necessarily, except of course this year. So it's all about how did 3-on-3 strategy change? I love the whole concept of 3-on-3 strategy. I'm really into trying to figure out what happened. So
yeah, it's basically studying chaos theory too.
Yes. It's just a very cool mathematical application to something that's even more variable than normal hockey. I think that's very fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going to stop geeking out. Right
now. You've lost me. No, I'm just kidding.
Have you guys ever seen the Lego movie where like the Unikitty character is like taking over the boardroom and she's just like business, 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 and I'm like that, but with like stats, stats, stats. Like, don't get me started. I'll keep going.
Yeah, because for me, I mean, I kind of was asking both of you this question tongue in cheek, mm-hmm. when how many games have gone to overtime, because when I watch it, it seems like every single game has gone to overtime. And, you know, it's sometimes frustrating to watch, you know, like you just, can we please like end this game, you know, in regulation.
Yeah.
But then you both explained it in a very statistical manner, and it was great.
Yeah.
Are there any other thoughts that you want to add? I mean, in terms of especially like, people who are new to it, or actually people maybe who want to up their game, like.
Yeah. So there's a great site called Evolving Hockey, run by two twins who are Minnesota Wild fans. And you can follow them on Twitter at Evolving Wild, because
they're Minnesota Wild fans.
Yes. They are one of the forerunners on a stat called WAR. Which is a baseball stat and also a basketball stat, but it's very hard to translate into hockey, because in baseball, it's five things. It's fielding, it's batting, it's three other things. I'm not great at baseball. I am not a baseball fan. I'm a White Sox fan. But in hockey, it's harder to sort of qualify those five, what those five things would be. And there's a lot more to sort of bring into it. So it's a relatively new stat. But it's also important because it shows how important a player is in terms of individual impact. There's a difference between WAR and expected WAR. And expected WAR is sort of that expected goal stat individual. So it's what the player's impact should be. And then WAR doesn't account for that difference between luck and reality and expected. So there's a difference between those two stats, but those are both really important and will probably get more important as it continues to develop as a stat.
Yeah, there's been like three or four really major like WAR models out there, I think, just in the last couple of years, because they keep tweaking them. And I think Evolving Hockey is one of the best. Money Puck uses a very good version. I don't think they call it WAR, but it's kind of like a similar kind of thing. Their models are very good at predicting playoff chances. Is their big thing. I have a love-hate relationship with WAR and GAR, because I think that they cater to some players that typically get in much closer, despite the fact that a lot of times goals are scored in that kind of like mid danger area.
But yeah.
I think they have adapted over time to be much better about that. But like Patrick Kane is always undervalued, I think, in WAR and GAR.
So a part of that is also that there's separate impacts, and Patrick Kane's defensive WAR, because there's offensive, defensive, and then penalties are sort of like the three main parts of WAR now. His defensive WAR is never great, and it's always bad.
No, it's and nobody expects him to be good, and you know that's exactly what it looks like on the ice.
Yeah.
My problem is that I think that sometimes there needs to be kind of like a balance between, well, this guy is just really, really, really good at this one thing. He's like excellent. And even if he's really bad at this thing, does it really matter? Like, is it, I mean, it matters, but like, does it matter in the end when the results are he's always scoring more?
Yeah.
I still think there's tweaking, and that's just the nature of hockey and how variable it is. There's just too much randomness. But I think that whole dream of having one or two stats that can kind of do a big summary is the goal.
Yes.
It'll be much harder in hockey than it is for like baseball, which I don't like baseball either. Everybody, people are always bringing it up, and I'm like, would you stop making me even think about baseball? That'd be great. So yes, I 100% think that and those types of one trick stat are the future, and that I'm excited about the tweaking that they're going to be doing the more and more over time.
Yes, so. To your point, two of the most sort of under sort of not so their WARs are lower than you think they would be are McDavid and Kane, because both of them both have bad defensive impact.
Yes.
McDavid versus somebody, versus somebody like Austin Matthews or Mark Stone, who are well-rounded players.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I didn't really think about like the evolution of stats and how this is something that could keep getting more and more efficient, I suppose, as time goes on.
Yeah, and hopefully more and more explainable, because WAR is sort of, it's a lot of math that goes into it.
Yeah, and like we said, there's different models that people are using. There's bunches and bunches of them. In fact, most of the more popular or more well-known statisticians on like Twitter will have they'll bet against each other during the playoffs to figure out whose model is the best at predicting what's going to happen. And they all have slightly different variations to these types of models. And each one of them, each iteration is getting you a little bit closer to maybe not a perfect stat, but a more ideal stat.
Yeah. And hockey's going to always be very hard to predict, because it's on there's wild times when the Columbus Blue Jackets sweep the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So yeah.
There's always that element of chaos in hockey.
Yeah.
And that's why we all love it.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts?
I will say that at one of the Viz conferences recently, I heard a great quote from Micaiah Blake McCurdy, who is the wizard behind Hockey Viz, which is another great site if anybody wants to go out and look at some of the visualizations. I think people will be like, I don't understand that, but you know, if you like looking at pictures, it's pretty. Also Effective Math on Twitter, but he had a great quote that was that analytics is not about painting the full picture. It's about putting your finger on a specific thing and expanding on it. So I think that's a great takeaway that some people have that are like, well, stats doesn't explain what happened. Well, maybe it doesn't have to. Maybe it just needs to explain this one event or this one thing that happened, and then that can be extrapolated into something bigger. We think Brandon Hagel is a great player because he's great in transition and good in the forecheck. Why isn't he scoring? You could use stats to try to figure that out. I think it's good at doing specific things, and if it gives you a bigger picture, that's great. But I think there's a lot more to stats than just did it predict something right or wrong, which is I think a lot of times people get held up on the whole, well, they didn't win but they were really good at this. Okay, well, what happened? And I think stats can help you, in addition to watching the game, figure that out.
Yeah, it's just additional context.
Yes.
I definitely want to end on letting everyone know we're working on a stats article to try to put this in a very digestible format so that people who are new to the game, and I guess even, you know, veteran statisticians can also take a look at this. I know there's a lot of people who have written very eloquently on the subject, but we're going to try our hand at this as well. So we're look out for that. Thanks, everybody. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to cars.com. It's magical.